Welcome to another off-season edition of the Student of the Game. I'm Kyle, the Student of the Game, here to my left. It's still tough adjusting to the whole to my left thing. I mean, seriously, right after I used that in like the speech, the best man speech at the wedding, with you being on my right, then we go and change everything up.
I know, right?
Well, actually, no, maybe it's all sappy because that would be the last time I would say on the right. Whatever, I'm Kyle, the Student of the Game. To my left, Weasel and Chris here to continue to bring you quality action here at the Student of the Game. Number of different things we could talk about here. Obviously, a lot of stuff going on with suspensions for the Saints players. New developments as far as where those suspensions are at. All players have either filed or given the NFL intention and notes showing intent to appeal the charges. Also, we will touch on the passing of Junior Seau and what implications possible research connected to his the possible examining of his brain could mean for the league. Other things coming up may include also Kurt Warner and all the news and in reaction to him saying he doesn't want his kids to play, all that, all a lot of other good stuff here. But let's go ahead and go over a few free agent rumors here now. Something I thought very strange and awkward in the whole recent acquisition of Peyton Manning by the Broncos is that the only one of his old players that he will be playing with is Jacob Tammy. Also, the fact that they picked up Tracy Porter from former Saint, who took back the pick six that sealed his Super Bowl loss. But now there's rumors out there that Dallas Clark may have to play against Peyton.
Twice.
Well, we knew that already, but yeah, as Weasel put it eloquently, twice. Can you dig it? So any reaction to that, as far as the Chiefs picking up, should they pick up Dallas Clark, because at this time this is not confirmed, it's just rumor. They're showing interest. It was on Tuesday last week he examined the grounds, I believe, so to speak, or they examined him. I don't know how that works exactly, but any reaction to what that could do to the Chiefs' offense?
At least gives it some veteran presence. You got some young tight ends. Dallas Clark. Yeah, it's Dallas Clark. He can help out with the. He could at least help out the young guys out there.
Yeah, Tony Moiaki being one. And who was the other one that got Chris?
Kevin Boss.
Oh, of course, the former Giant. Yeah. You see how I took that over the Giants fan to help me out with that? You like that? He also will be making the transition from the Raiders. So there's another bit of AFC West transition.
And if he does sign with the Chiefs, they are still three tight ends behind the Patriots.
Well, as far as the roster, perhaps. But again, you know, hey, they actually use their running backs to run the football. I'm just saying. Right, so that's all very interesting there, too. Also looking at Osiemogu Otogwe. Ah, I said it without stuttering this time. Yes.
Nice.
Chiefs also bringing him in as a possible defensive candidate as well for the secondary. Dontari Poe was the draft pick, so they were concentrating on the front line in the draft, at least with that pick, and now they're looking at veteran presence in the safety spot there for the secondary, try to get a little bit of pass stopping, understanding that they just might be facing the best quarterback in the game right now twice a year. Other acquisitions, I think, what was it? Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis, no longer a Patriot as of last week. He'll now be taking handoffs from the Ginger Rifle himself, Andy Dalton in Cincinnati. I don't believe I almost forgot that. That was kind of sad.
There's another ginger out there, though. You got to be careful. It's in the AFC North.
Stop with the suspense. There's gonna be another scaring one. Me.
We got to wait for like at least 8 weeks to start doing that.
Yeah, he's not the only ginger out there anymore.
Well, I mean, do you think he's going to play? Do you even know who that
no.
is?
Well, it's,
do you even know the guy's name?
He's a fullback for the 49ers. It's Bruce Miller.
You don't even know who that
is,
though.
It was the rookie. It was the rookie from that got drafted by the Browns. Weaver?
Brandon Whedon.
Whedon.
So close.
Whedon.
So close. That's okay. Still dig you, Weasel. But yes, no. See, please don't. Like pump it up like a horror movie. You know, get the hype. Coming this fall. Ta-da. Another ginger hits the NFC North. It's ginger. That's getting ridiculous. So now that we've talked about the draft here a little bit, we're bringing that a little bit. I've heard a lot of talk that the Bengals actually had a fantastic draft. I don't know. I mean, we kind of went over that a little bit. We like the directions that they went. but we don't know so much about, you know, what impact that bringing them is going to be. It's going to be a lot of adjustment. Jerome Simpson recently parting for the Vikings there too. So I think a good running back is something that, you know, especially a guy who hasn't fumbled, no offense, Weasel, hasn't fumbled as the firm does, could be a big deal for the Bengals there. That's, I mean, that's going to be a pretty solid little team, I have a feeling.
Cedric Benson was no slouch, though.
No.
He held it up pretty good.
Right, but can any team succeed without a committee? They can. It's just darn rare nowadays, especially, you know, what with the wear and tear upon running backs, you know, nowadays. So that makes it a little bit difficult to know where that's going to go. So, Weasel, take me a little bit further. Like, talk to me a little bit about what you think about the Steelers. Now, we were talking about how the Bengals were getting right with the draft and their acquisitions, but the Steelers and Ravens seem to be falling off a little bit. Give me a little bit on that.
Well, the Steelers, what are you talking about for, like, the draft and all?
Well, just in general, as far as the setup for the division, like, the Bengals could be threatening to make an impact with all these recent acquisitions and these drafts. I mean, do they have a good enough offseason to make themselves a possible winner?
I actually think so. I mean, yeah, the pickup of the firm, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, their first pick was Kirkpatrick.
Dre Kirkpatrick, yeah. Corner. Yes. From
corner, and they had a pretty deep draft that was and this all started, I mean, 2 years ago, we weren't talking about the Bengals being a really serious contender. And then the Bengals draft, like, Andy Dalton, and they get A.J. Green. So they actually have a defense going now. And with that strong draft, I could see them really catching up to the Steelers and Ravens. It was nice that the Steelers, they were able to pick up two good offensive linemen. They were both rated in the first round, DeCastro and what was the other guy's name, the second rounder?
I'm going to look it up real quick.
Yeah.
The Steelers?
The Steelers had a lot of injuries on the offensive line, and they're getting some people back.
Mike Adams, offensive tackle.
Yes. And so they were able to really, you know, help it out. But as for the Ravens, they had a unfortunate injury this offseason. They had Terrell Suggs, one of their best linebackers up there, you know, with Ray
Lewis. I think he would be called a slash defensive end.
Slash defensive end, yeah.
T-Sizzle.
Yeah, right.
T-Sizzle.
Check for me, Chris. Is he actually listed as a D-end or a linebacker?
T-Sizzle? He's a linebacker.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't even need to look that up.
I don't need that.
He does
not need that.
He gets all those sacks.
I've seen him listed as defensive end as well at times, too.
Well, it's in a 3-4, so he's a,
exactly.
He's a hybrid defensive end.
Think. Oh, my God, I don't believe I'm drunk. Jason Taylor. There we go. Except a lot more angry and a lot less pretty.
Yeah, here's this offseason with, I originally heard it was like a playing basketball thing, but supposedly it was during workouts. What was his injury?
Tore his Achilles.
Hold up. This false stuff that you think you heard, you announced on this show.
Exactly.
So we can get accused of trying to smear the name of a player who's big on a team that you don't like because you're a Steeler fan.
Hey,
whatsoever.
With a teammate of Ray Lewis who shot and killed someone, allegedly.
Allegedly.
Wow.
I didn't know I'd have
to detach myself from my own darn show. This is kind of retarded.
See, the first reports I heard was he was got injured in training. Then reports came out later that he was playing basketball. So which one is it?
So, but
okay,
anyways, that's going to be a little bit of a hamper on the defensive line. So
just a bit.
For the defense as a whole. And I mean, the players, they're getting up there in age. I mean, you got Ray Lewis, who's approaching, what, 40? Or
something like that. Well, let's transition away from the NFC North, or excuse me, AFC North. Let's go over to the East, and I'll ask you, Chris, because I don't think I ever actually asked you this question in the draft show. As far as the Giants draft, like, what's your feeling on that? Did you think it was a good draft?
I think going after running back first, you know, first round was good because, you know, that was the best player at that time, I believe. Also, then getting a wide receiver in the second to take in for Manningham, who's with the Niners now. But overall, it's pretty good. I mean, they got another defensive tackle late in the seventh, which isn't a big deal. I mean, they're loaded at defensive tackle now, but, you know, they got two offensive tackles as well just to try to solidify that offensive line that they're shifting around with. McKenzie's gone now, and they're moving David Deal over to right tackle. And they just need to play like they did in the playoffs, and they'll be all right.
Well, don't knock the addition of defensive linemen too much, because you got to do stuff like chase people like Michael Vick back in the backfield of the Eagles. You got to do that twice a season anyway, and the Giants did not fare well against the Eagles, and this gives us a perfect opportunity to bring in our resident Philadelphia Eagle fan. Well, not resident, he's in California now, but our Eagle fan, Tom Kernan. Tom, I promised you I would give you an opportunity not only to talk on this show, but to give us your unadulterated, unhindered, well, I'm not going to say unfiltered, but opinion on how that draft went. So take it away, my man, Tom Kernan. Let him know how you feel.
Hey, what's up, guys? How are you doing?
Doing good, man.
You know, at first, just like every Eagles fan, we wonder why Andy Reid models his draft after his diet. You know, high risk, no reward. But, you know, after getting to look at some of the pickups that they made, you know, they needed to shore that defense up.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, we mentioned the draft there. They got Fletcher Cox for that. But D'Amico Ryan's before the draft, going to be a big deal to make that happen.
That's a big deal, definitely.
Yeah, D'Amico Ryan's definitely short. And they got the kid from Cal, too. His name's slipping my mind at the moment. But he'll also help that linebacking core.
It's not Jenkins. It's Michael
Kendricks.
Kendricks. There it is.
Michael Kendricks with a Y.
Right.
Which I like.
M-Y-C-H-A. I gotta admit that is a good spin on a traditional name.
Yes, and from what I've heard, I talked to my resident Bay Area expert, the other Bay Area out here in California. He says this Michael Kendricks kid is very, very good. He's very fast, strong. And he said he'll definitely help that linebacking core. So put him next to D'Amico Ryans. You have, you know, some other depth there. The Eagles suddenly have depth on defense where they did not have depth last year.
Yeah, a huge deal. And then, of course, we're talking about getting Babbitt and Cole in there to attack the quarterback. A huge, huge deal when you're trying to stop the Giants or basically any team in the NFC East now that RG3 is in the picture for the Redskins. So, I mean, before we were talking about, we were a little concerned about the way they jumped up to get Fletcher Cox during the draft. Overall, do you think the Eagles have made significant moves to possibly take the division for the NFC East?
I think with the moves Eagles made in the offseason, they're now NFC favorites.
NFC favorites?
That's my personal opinion.
You notice how he left the East off?
Wow.
That's a bull.
You see what happened with the New Orleans Saints, you can't think that they're going to be able to have anything like the years they've been having. I mean, you look at the rest of the teams in the South, the Buccaneers will be better. I still don't think they can compete. You know, you got the Falcons, but it just seems when the chips are down, they can't get it done. The NFC East, you know, that's always up for grabs with those teams, but I still think the Eagles did enough to get through there. You look out West, you got the 49ers who are going to be tough. The North, you still got to deal with the Packers, but I don't know. I mean, the Eagles went 8-8 last year, and they were 4-8 then they were top 10 ranked in all three offensive categories, main offensive categories, and defensive categories. It's not like they were playing bad football.
Right, and I mean, there were a lot of close games. A lot of close games, like they lost to the Niners by 1 point. If they had that game back, they probably would have still made the playoffs. I think the math worked out that way then, too. So a lot of close losses as well, made in with late mistakes or whatever. So that's certainly a factor. But I think let's go. We'll say for now, golden green for the NFC.
Sounds good.
Feeling that Niners Eagle matchup, right?
Yes, that would, you know, or that light-colored gold with green and Green Bay.
Oh, look out. He's talking about a little green-on-green action.
Yeah, so those are the three teams that I really think have legitimate shots. I mean, the Giants are defending world champs.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Eagles always play the Giants off. You know, and so you probably got four teams with a real legitimate chance to come out of that NFC.
Yeah, I think that's spot on myself too. And I think the main difference between But, like, I think the Eagles will crush the Cowboys, but what makes the Giants difficult is very easy, is that, you know, the Giants coach isn't going to ice his own kicker. Just throwing that out there. You know. Anyways.
Yes.
So as far as that, you mentioned earlier that the situation in the NFC South with the Saints is heating up quite a bit here, too. We were talking earlier before we called you in that all four players have either officially filed or have sent notice that they will file for to appeal their charges, too. So let me go ahead and ask you up front. Do you think what was handed down was too difficult? I think what we got here, we got a full year for Vilma, got half a year for Hargrove, and then 4 games for Will Smith, 3 games for Scott Vegeta. Do you think that is too much? Do you think it's spot on? Do you think it's too little? Where do you fall on the punishments themselves?
You know, I don't know too much about how they figured out, you know, it was those four guys and no one else in the defense. But for Vilma, I think he deserves a year, absolutely, because he's the defensive captain of that team. And, you know, basically the coach gives him the orders and he gives them down to the team, or vice versa. So I think the defensive captain should have to face at least an entire season, whether it was Vilma or whoever it was. And then you see the things coming out now where they were told to, quote-unquote, play dumb.
Right, in the case of Hargrove, right.
And so it's tough. It's a tough situation for that whole city because what they went through with Katrina and then with the BP oil spill and just everything that was going on, the team won the Super Bowl and it just builds the city back up and it just gives them a sense of morale. You know, the entire city of New Orleans has this new sense of morale because, you know, the Yanks, you know, the team that used to make people wear bags over their heads were world champions. And now you look and you see how tainted that world championship is now. It's just another tough blow for the city of New Orleans more than just for the Saints themselves.
I don't know that you did that intentionally, but from what I picked up was that was from Saints to Taints right there.
Yeah, from the Aints to the Saints to the Taints. I guess we can say that on the radio.
Well, I mean, you know, we're not referring to the awkward double concept, just but a taint in the sense of the tainted reputation of the players, just so, you know,
yes.
People try to bust us for using poor language.
Absolutely. Very, like I said, it just puts a black eye, you know, on the entire season that team had. And the man I feel bad for is Drew Brees.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, Drew Brees went out and he played his heart out and, you know, I can't feel bad because I can't think that someone in Drew Brees' position, who is the team captain, didn't know that this was going on. And I don't know if he has enough pull to be able to say, hey, this has to stop. But still, the entire team to me is it's reminiscent of when we found out that McGuire and Bonds and Sosa, you know, and A-Rod and everyone was doing the steroids in baseball, it automatically tainted anyone who hit home runs.
Right. It's a cultural
now,
issue.
Yeah. Now this entire football team, you know, anyone that was on that roster, anyone that had anything to do with that team, at least in my eyes personally, you know, it has to be tainted. There has to be some sort of investigation done, for me personally.
An investigation as far as, well, okay, yeah, I see where you're going, where you got to follow the players to see what they got.
Yeah, you know, I mean, because I don't know who did what. Or, you know, they came out and they gave Hargrove, Vilma, and Fujita, and one other guy, Will Smith, they got suspended 4 games for Smith and Fujita, 8 for Hargrove, and the entire season 16 for Vilma. But still, like I said, I don't know if that's enough. I don't know what else was going on in that locker room.
Yeah, the part that we know what we do about, you know, people going for people's joints or whatever just happened to be picked up by a documentary that was in place on one of the players. I forget what, remember what disease it was in reference to, Weasel?
Oh, it was for a, I forgot the player's name, but.
But what was the disease he had?
Oh.
Well, that's not important, but the point was the documentary was in there and we just happened to field Greg Williams making those comments. And so Let me throw this out to you, Tom. In Hargrove's declaration, it obviously already mentions Greg Williams, which, I mean, this is obviously going to be yet another thing in the case to have him essentially lifetime banned, which you and I have both talked about needs to happen. But Do you think this will Vitt's name is specifically mentioned in the declaration as well, who he's currently suspended for half the season. Do you think that that could add weight to perhaps say have it so he's suspended for the entire season on the strength of that declaration?
Yeah, I mean if Williams, who's already done in football, yeah. Williams might be able to get a job in some pop Warner league somewhere. Vitt, this is going to Roger Goodell likes to drop the hammer. He likes to make an example. And if Roger Goodell finds out that they were having players mislead, which he will look at it himself, because you know he sends his representatives to go investigate this. They bring back the information to him. He makes his decision. So therefore, indirectly or directly, they are misleading the commissioner of the NFL,
yeah.
Lying to the commissioner of the NFL. And from what I've seen from Mr. Goodell, since he's taken over that position, he's not going to take kindly to that. And you could see, you know, heavier, maybe, I don't know if they could add more games to the suspension, but he might be able to add some, you know, zeros to the end of whatever fines he handed down.
That's a thought. Weasel, what do you got?
Yeah, I'm not sure how many NFL players on the Saints were interviewed by the NFL during that 2010 investigation, but Anthony Hargrove, I mean, with this declaration, he was one of them, and pretty much the whole thing was that he misled the NFL, but he got 8 games, and he wasn't really a big defensive player on that team.
He wasn't a star, per se.
But I think it was because the investigation, they pretty much asked him. I don't know how many players they asked. I don't think Vilma was in it. I don't know if...
Somehow or another, they seem to have gotten word that Hargrove was going to be interviewed, or they could have prompted the whole team. Who knows? But Hargrove's the one... The only way we know about Hargrove specifically is because he has written the signed declaration. That's what made him stand out.
The signed declaration and his one, I mean, why would a backup defensive player get 8 games while, you know, you have like Fajita who gets 4 games, 3 games?
Let me stop you there. You're a resident Viking fan. Do you remember any big hits in particular by Hargrove in that scandalous NFC Championship game?
Don't recall specific players, but I remember that there was the high and low ones, and there were late hits. I think Darren Sharper was guilty of one of them, but with Anthony Hargrove,
I think Hargrove's was the hit after the high low with McCray.
Yeah,
Hargrove basically speared and drove Brett Favre into the ground.
Yeah, we are talking about the same one, Tom.
Good,
there you go.
Good.
So that's the 8 games on that, is that we have a specific event, and now Tom cited too. We don't know how we got that evidence there, but it's been said or read about that very prudent records were kept to make sure that players got their money. So not only were they doing this, they were keeping good notes on it.
Ooh.
So if that's something that they got a hold of, that could have something to do with the basis of the suspensions. I don't know per se, but like I said, I'm just kind of putting a couple things together. That could be one way they got a hold of it. I don't know. So let me ask you this, Tom. Something we talked about a little bit when I called in with you on WTMY was the class actions with the concussions going on against the NFL. And I'm sure by now you've heard about Junior Seau's unfortunate situation with his suicide and all that. His family, there's been kind of a take back on that, but his family has very seriously considered donating his brain towards research. And Weasel, give us a little bit on what the disease in question would be.
Well, the disease in question is CTE, which is chronic traumatic encephalopathy, and it's a neurogenic disease that is caused by, in part, of a repetitive trauma to the head.
In other words, the brain hitting the skull several times. But and correct me if I'm wrong on this. According to what you have on it there, the only way it can be found is post-mortem.
Right. They have to. Yeah, after the death, they need to examine the brain. So there's no way of diagnosing it during
while the player's alive, frankly.
While the player's alive.
Okay.
So that's why. Oh, go ahead.
Well, no, and I was going to say, Seau is not the first ex-NFL player to commit a suicide.
Right. Yes. Dewarson, I think, is the one before him.
He is the first iconic
yes.
NFL football player
to commit a suicide. And sometimes it takes something like that to open eyes. And with the fact that this is all happening at once, you know, you have the Jim McMahon lawsuits, you have the other lawsuits in Texas, you have Junior Seau suicide, you have the Bounty Gate, you have all these things going on at once. Roger Goodell better be doing some really, really, really good, you know, problem control.
Playing good defense, if you will.
We could be in threat of losing the NFL. You know, President Obama is not afraid to step in and govern sports.
But he's talked about it before.
At least he's tried to.
Yeah.
And I honestly think, you know, maybe not lose the NFL, but the NFL as we knew it could change drastically.
So let me draw another couple lines for you then real quick, Tom, to that end. The comments made by Kurt Warner about him not wanting to let his kids play, that have been made such a circus lately. There's been talk of the actual banning of college football. Do you think that that's a realistic outcome?
I mean, at that point, you know, when they're men when they graduate college. They're men when they get drafted by the NFL. But when they're being recruited, they're still boys. They're 17, 16, some maybe 18. In that case, they have legal guardians, parents. And you have to protect people, you know, whether it's in sports, whether it's police officers in the street, whether, you know, people need to be protected. And I understand it's a game that's been played for a very, very long time. But, you know, if you're seeing all of these, now that we have so much more knowledge, and we have, you know, it's not just, oh, he got his bell rung, put him back in the game, or, you know, it's just, when we start looking back, how many more suicides are we going to see? How many more, you know, tragedies are we going to see as the further you look back, maybe in the 70s, 60s, 80s, of players who had played 15, 20 years before?
Well, heck, in the case of Seau, he spanned the 90s, too.
There was actually, you were mentioning that there were many other deaths, and three of them, the other two besides Seau, that occurred in the last 60 months, Bears safety Dave Durison and former Falcons safety Ray Easterlin. And Easterlin was actually one of the plaintiffs in a lawsuit earlier about them failing to properly inform the players about the concussions, so...
And the other shocking thing is, the most tragic of the cases, the most, let's say, you know, intense of the cases are defensive players.
Right.
You're seeing safeties. You're seeing linebackers. These offensive players take contact, but only when they get hit. Defensive players are pretty much taking contact on every play. Whether they're getting blocked, whether they're hitting someone, there's contact on every play, and that's why I think you keep seeing defensive player, defensive player, defensive player, defensive player. And you know, it's a shame, but there comes a point where, you know, a person's quality of life, humanity, people need to be people and understand that, you know, men being able to take care of their children and their families is more important than us being able to sit down and watch football every Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And so let's kind of take a different direction on this too here. Like we mentioned the concept that Bounty Gate is something that shows, you know, that is implicated here, you know, physically, intentionally trying to make hits to cause harm to other players. Do you think the existence of Bounty Gate may be something that at the very conservative, like from the players' point of view, do you feel like they put their lawsuits at risk with this coming out as a cultural problem rather than one that was induced by the NFL as an organization? Like, do you feel like blame may be shifted from the NFL to the individual teams, to the individual cultures that they played in?
You know, I think they're two separate things. The bounties and the hits to hurt people caused the concussions. But the NFL puts in the policy to deal with the concussions. And if the NFL's policy to deal with the concussions was a bunch of smoke and mirrors, then I think the NFL is still liable for any issues that these men are having post-career.
Okay. and well, the part that I think that the lawsuit stems, at least one of them, from a claim connected to 1994. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, Weasel. Where Paul Tagliabue, if not Pete Rozelle, is still the commissioner. So let me go with this route. Has Roger Goodell taken enough steps to try to make the game safer?
I think he's doing the best he can.
Okay.
There's a lot of people that don't like Roger Goodell because of his iron fist that he rules with. But, you know, I think he realizes he's a smart man. And I think he sees the storm that's brewing. And I think he's seen it maybe even before he took over as commissioner.
Oh, he's definitely seen it before. It's been public in the news. That much I'm feeling good about, because these rules were instituted. They just weren't enforced as well as they should have been by officials and well, basically he himself.
And I think Roger Goodell's number one concern is NFL, is that league. And he's trying to do what he can to save the league. I don't know if he can do enough. This is worse than the steroid situation and anything baseball ever had put together, because you know what? The steroids are men injecting drugs into their own body. That if they cause harm, they cause harm. This is the men going out and doing what they're getting paid to do, getting injured, and not being taken care of correctly.
So the damage may be done already.
And that's the big thing. And you know, and you've seen it kind of calm down. When the stories first came out, people said, oh, that's the game, that's the game. That's not the game. The game isn't to go out and intentionally try to injure someone. I never saw that. In anything I've ever read or looked at or watched about football, I've never heard it is about intentionally going and trying to hurt someone. If you hit them really hard and hurt them, then okay. But to intentionally aim at a body part, to know this guy has ACL problems, let me go at his knee. This guy has previous concussions, let me go at his head. That is called premeditated assault.
That's true. Well, battery, technically.
Football.
Right, exactly.
It's something that needs to, I think, needs to change drastically. I personally believe, I don't want to see that. Because I don't just think about the men that are on that field playing every Sunday that I get so much joy out of watching. I think about their families. I think about their children and their wives that are going to need to take care of these guys when they're 45 because they, you know, can't feed themselves. Or, you know, give them a nice salary and their families and their families' families are probably set for the rest of their lives. But what about the guy who puts everything out on the football field to make the NFL what it is? And it's just, you know, it's a shame. It's a shame that it has to happen that way, but
couldn't put it any better.
Something has to change somewhere.
Couldn't put it any better.
Now with the
hold on, what do you got, Chris?
The NHL has a concussion policy. I think it's after like a certain amount of concussions. I'm trying to find it right now, but I've heard it before. Something like 7 concussions or something like that in one player through a lifespan, that they're going to be like banned from the NHL, that they can't play anymore.
So Troy Aikman would have been able to complete
right,
his career.
Right? You think the NFL might be going into that aspect possibly?
Yeah, I mean, you may have to, because you know, as an athlete yourself, Kyle.
And give Chris his due, too. He played back in the day.
To try to keep you off the field, it's tough to give you, and especially, I mean, you look at hockey, you see a guy get hit in the face with the puck, go get 40 stitches, and he's back on the ice 10 minutes later.
Yeah.
But, you know, but the NFL, it's really tough in any sport to keep the guy off the field, especially if his team is in competition for something.
Absolutely.
So,
well,
it's just a tough, tough situation. It's a tough situation for the NFL, tough situation for the players, it's a tough situation for the players' families, and it's a tough situation for us fans.
And this is something you remind me of when I was talking to you about it back before when I was a guest on your show, was the fact that this isn't just a spot, this is livelihood. This is their job they're playing for. So, you know, I mean, we've all gone to work in some form or fashion, not necessarily as NFL players, but with a sore throat, you know, yeah, it's not the same as playing with your head hurt or anything like that. But, you know, from their point of view, they're gonna endure some of that to keep the millions rolling. They're gonna push the button and take that risk for certain injuries. I know I would. Now, if they're telling me I got head trauma, that might be a little different. But, You know, there are some guys with the money they have on the table and the fact that they're playing like this was their purpose in life. This was their dream. They're going to throw those dice like that. And that's why I feel like it's a cultural problem more than it is a legal one. But unfortunately, the only way the rights can be the wrongs can be righted is with money. Weasel, what do you got?
One thing that's big with this lawsuit is that the NFL formed a committee to investigate concussions and the effects on players. And the thing about that's tough for the players in like the 70s and 80s is that for them, whenever they got their, I guess, their bell rung mm-hmm. or when it's something like that, they didn't know the effects of the medical research didn't really know the effects of concussions.
Right.
And supposedly this 1994 committee had information regarding that. I think it's not just getting a concussion is the problem. It's when players are getting back onto the field, and when
they're
say that
they're in a sensitive place where if
they're
they get
in a very
hit again,
sensitive place,
it'll do
and it
more
can be,
damage.
Yeah, it could do like irreversible damage. And the thing about it is that this lawsuit is saying that the NFL held back information, telling players that hey, you shouldn't go back out there because this could affect your livelihood 20 years down the road. And it's just the question is, I mean, it's going to be tough for them to prove that the NFL withheld information from their players. Because only about, what was it, about like 4 years ago and all.
Well, 4 years ago and all is when they made it public. We don't really know. I mean, I'm sure there's science journals that can say, hey, we came out with this information. But I think what you're getting at, and correct me if I'm wrong, is when did the NFL know it was a problem officially?
And
I mean, is it something like big tobacco where the effects of smoking were known long before that they were putting a package on the label warning may be harmful to your health, you know?
I know. I think
hey, every.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, guys. I was just going to say everything is known well before it comes out.
There you
everything
go.
Everything is known. They have the iPad 10 developed right now. So I don't want to hear it. It's just like with tobacco, with alcohol and problems with liver, with, you know, pills and side effects of pills. They know. They know, and they know long before that stuff comes out. And, you know, it's just, I just get so emotional about this because, like I said, I'm a person that really cares about people, you know, and I it's just and I hear what you're saying about the culture. Is it the culture or is it the NFL? But I think the issue is something completely different. Just like they put the warnings on cigarettes, cigarettes may cause lung cancer, birth defects. People then get to make a choice whether or not they want to buy a pack of cigarettes and smoke them. If the NFL knew, you know, having a concussion and getting back out on the field can cause long-term effects to your brain and your style of living and things like that, they need to tell the players. And then the players have their choices, grown men, whether or not they want to go back out in the field or not.
And what
you know, because you can't tell me that every single one of those players would have went back out on the field. Some of them might have chosen to. But there might be others that say, you know, I don't want long-term effects to my brain.
Right, right.
I don't want that. And that's the issue. There may be a culture where these guys say, you know, with a broken leg, I still want to be on the field. With a broken arm, I may want to be on the field. But not every single one of them is going to say, you know, with irreversible brain damage possibilities, I want to go back out in the field. And that's the thing. They needed to give the players that warning. And if they did know, which I personally believe that they did, then the NFL is liable for anything that's happened to any of these players, whether or not they wanted to go back out in the field or not.
Well, and here's what we could pretty much bet on is that they knew before they instituted these rules with the helmet and all that. That happened in the 2000s decade, which is certainly well after 1994. So, you know, there you
and
go.
You helmet to helmet's one thing. You hit a guy in his chest and his head's going to go back.
Yeah.
And when your head violently goes back, your brain's going to move. It's more than just helmet to helmet hits. Helmet to helmet hits will cause it much, much more, but driving a man into the ground, hitting a man in his chest or in his torso and his head whips back, your brain's still going to suffer some sort of damage. And I understand they tried to institute the rule to try to protect the head and neck area. But like I said, football is a very, very, very violent sport. And when people say, oh, it's been violent forever, yeah, but you know what? The guys haven't – look at Fletcher Cox. The guys haven't been 6'7",
290 pounds running 4.440s.
Not even a little
for
bit.
50 years. You know, the athletes are getting bigger. They're getting stronger. They're getting faster. They hit harder. The issue is the rules stay the same.
So physics is changing.
Or the way the game is played stays the same.
Yeah, physics is changing, but there's no adjustment for the different physics. Chris, did you have something? No, okay.
No.
So, yeah, I think you're definitely onto that, onto something there for sure with the whole bigger, faster, stronger players. Like, we say that, but I think because a lot of people don't know the difference, like, they don't realize, like, the first person to really start working out hard in the offseason, famously, is Bill Romanowski back when he was a 49er during, you know, their stint there in the 90s. You know, that's part of it.
Yeah, I mean, they're working out. But also, it's—I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's something to worry. But it just seems like they're just getting bigger and stronger, and they're faster. And it's every year you see a new guy who's just bigger, faster, and stronger than anybody else that's ever played the game.
Yeah, it's the evolution to like actually raise and aspire football players. Children, I say children, I mean high schoolers, or hell, now even, you know, you got Pop Warner kids that are I saw a commercial for Pop Warner the other day. It looked more like a recruiting poster to put your kid into a program for a future career track. It's getting to that point where they're raising, it's like something out of a novel where they're raising super soldiers practically, you know? I mean, minus the steroids, well, allegedly.
Yeah, you know, they're no longer playing Pop Warner football to, you know, teach the kid the sport or teach them some sort of lesson
or like to have fun
to do to keep their time full. They're playing Pop Warner football with the end result of becoming an NFL star. And if you're playing football, Pop Warner football, to be an NFL star, there's a big difference in just playing it to take up your kid's Saturday afternoon. You know, they're going to work out harder. They're going to, you know, get them lifting earlier. They're going to have them, you know, training harder earlier. And it's just, like I said, as that evolves, the sport needs to evolve with it.
Which it has not.
That's the issue. The sport is about 20 years behind the evolution of the bodies.
Okay, well, we're coming up on here on about 30 minutes here with you, Tom, which has been an awesome, awesome discussion, man. So I'm going to have to give you the opportunity to see if you got any last thoughts you want to throw on us here.
You know, just final thoughts on the whole thing for me is, you know, and I'm going to echo what I've already said. There comes a point where our entertainment needs to take a backseat to the safety of another human. You know, there's a reason that there's no more gladiators fighting lions, you know, and it just the safety of another human being needs to be at the forefront. And until the NFL can evolve itself to where, you know, I understand with the way the game's built, it's like hockey. It's not like a basketball or a baseball. With the way it's built for physicality, it's just, I don't know if it can evolve. I don't know if it can evolve to a point to catch up to where the bodies are at.
To where the science of developing those bodies is at, even.
I don't know if you could put enough pads on these guys, if you could pad the helmets enough. I don't know if you can do it. So there might come a point, you know, where we get 10 deaths on a football field in 1 year, and the league might get shut down. And it's just a fact of life right now. It's just a fact. It's a fact. I mean, could you imagine? Could you imagine if 10 years from now you get 10 deaths in 1 year on the football field? From guys hitting themselves so hard?
If that did happen, though, I mean, it would be the end of the game outright.
You know, and it's just the reality of things. So, in the meantime, the NFL has to try to do something. But my personal belief is, I believe it might be too late.
The damage may have already been done. All right.
Unless you go to those lower levels and you stop the way they're being trained to get them bigger, 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 faster, and stronger. So.
Well, Tom, man.
We'll see.
Yeah. That's a whole lot of stuff, man. That all a fantastic interview. Thank you very much for humoring me in my first effort to actually give an interview. Appreciate having you back on, man. And I hope we do it again. I'll make sure it's a lot more fun topic next time, because this was some pretty serious stuff here.
Thanks, Tom.
So thanks again, Tom. Awesome to have
you. All right. Thank you, guys.
All right. Be cool, man. All right. That was Tom Kernan. So a lot of cool stuff that he had to say, a lot of deep stuff he had to say, very philosophical. Weasley, you had a point you wanted to get in there, too, and I did not want to interrupt Tom's final point there.
Gotcha. And I think it's just that now going forward with the concussions being an issue, the thing is for with the players getting faster, with them getting stronger, whatever happens, even back in the day, it's not going to prevent concussions. Nothing can really prevent a concussion that's out there right now.
I think, and if what you're getting at to that point is we can do nothing really in terms of padding or anything like that to stop the brain from hitting the skull. And I think that's what Tom was saying with this point about the chest hits. You know? Right.
But I think what we can do now is that when a player does have concussion symptoms, when they feel their bell is rung or something like that.
Yeah, I see where you're going. We
can
prevent them.
Sit them down.
Yeah.
And it won't be a... And now on, it won't be like the guy's a wuss, he's sitting out type thing. It would be a preventive thing, and it would be actually, I think in the NFL now, they can make those decisions. And one of the things that is going to come up as why is a player that got a concussion, why is he getting back out there, was Colt McCoy.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing I want to say about that. You were talking about that earlier. Was the damage the actual hit with James Harrison? Or was when he got hit again later by something more minor? And you were kind of citing that the damage with that is done after the concussion is made. Chris, did you have something earlier? I saw you leaning in.
I was just going to say, just shove the helmet with Charmin and play on rubber fields.
Maybe. We'll send that one to the league office.
But with the concussion, if once you get the concussion, I mean, it takes the brain time to heal.
Yes.
And you need about, I think it's like 7 to 10 days where you should, I think they even go more to say, like, you shouldn't be near like bright lights and stuff like that.
The two parts of the body. Yeah, the two parts of the body that don't regenerate or don't regenerate well are your eyes, because blood can't really reach the white part of your eye there. The not the iris, well, whatever. I'm not a freaking optical expert. But your eyes and your brain are two of the slowest parts of your body to regenerate.
Yeah, they should. They need to incorporate some more concussion rules. Maybe like, you know, they may have a first concussion. It's like one game, you know, or 1 week they sit out. And it's supposed to be second one. They're supposed to be out at least 2 weeks. Maybe they need to go 4, and then third one 8. Not like back to back, like one season. Just overall, man. Look at Javid Best. We're not even talking about him. He missed half season with a concussion last year.
Oh, yeah.
Because all the concussions he had in college.
I mean, I'll say this, too. The reason why Brandon Whedon may have a job here, too, is because of that hit, that game with James Harrison. Because he could be like when Tom and I would be talking about it in the past, it could be like Crosby.
Sidney Crosby.
Thank you. Sidney Crosby for the Penguins who... I mean, he's still trying to come back. He only lately, in this regular season, came back for any distance of time and had to sit back down a lot. I mean, he may not ever be back again, and that's kind of what we're worried about with Colt McCoy today. You know, anyways.
And that was Sidney Crosby has been the last 2 years.
Right, exactly, Chris. You know, I mean, it's funny. Like, Tom cites football as being a violent sport with speed and bigger guys. Hockey's been experiencing the same thing, and they play a lot more games. And that may be why they have a concussion policy that's better as far as limiting the number of concussions a player could have. I mean, I'm very curious to see what will happen to Troy Aikman as he gets older. I think that'll be a good litmus test as to, you know, the actual effect. But that's too late.
One thing is that I'm wondering about with the lawsuit is the sheer number of NFL players.
What'd you say, 1,600?
There's right now, there was recently a... there was a suit in 13 players that were added, and a suit in Jackson, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And, the number is now up to like 1,600 NFL players, former NFL players. And the names on there, I mean, you recognize them. I mean, there's like Jim McMahon. There's like Fred Smoot was out there. And there's just...
What is Fred Smoot out doing out there? He never tackled anybody. But, I'm just joking. I'm just joking.
The thing is I mean, these players are bringing up that it's some of the issues are memory loss.
Actually, real there's, talk with Fred Smoot, remind me, he used to return kicks too, right? Or I think he at least played special teams.
I think he may have played some special teams, yeah. So
I mean, heck, that's dangerous too. We've seen some paralysis occur in those cases.
The Buffalo tight end.
Keith Everett.
Keith Everett, yes. He made a miraculous recovery, too, which was, you know, great.
Yeah, the fact that he could walk again was amazing. And I mean, you know, something as simple as him not having proper form in that he didn't keep his head up damn near made him paralyzed for life. Come on, dude.
Yeah, anyway. I think for the NFL and for college, even like Pop Warner going on, I mean, a lot of it's going to be you teach proper form. Yeah, like when you tackle, keep your head up. It's that's a big thing.
What's the phrase that you taught your kids, Chris? For what was it? Head up and wrap up or something like that? I forget what it was. You were telling me about how you taught Adam to tackle.
Oh, I always did. It was wrap, lift, and slam down to the ground. That's what I taught.
We may want to take the slam out of this.
But you wrap, you lift them off the feet, and you drive forward. So that's what I was taught him. But always your head back, looking at the numbers when you tackle. And that's what we said last year in the show with James Harrison. With him, if you go see him hit, his head is down. He's not looking at the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
His head's down. He's going for the spear. And that's going to hurt himself, too, coming soon.
And I think the part that hurts James Harrison is his arrogance about it, too. I mean, what was it he said about Roger Goodell? If he were on fire and I had to piss and could put him out, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy just doesn't get the fact that it's a lot bigger than him and his dang ego. Look, you got your ring. Dial back. I mean, I'm not saying don't play tough. But, like, when he creamed Colt McCoy, that was egregious. He didn't need to do that. He had him nailed. He made the decision to lower in an attack. And don't tell me it was about instinct. Don't tell me, oh, well, did he protect himself, blah, blah. It was a reflex. No, no, no. On this play, at least, this wasn't a bang-bang. He saw Colt McCoy. I don't know if Colt McCoy necessarily saw him right away. And he opened fire. You know, anyways, I don't know if you guys have anything else, but we definitely need to drop our information here. Definitely check us out here, www.thestudentofthegame.com. I'll be looking to have a lot more guests in the future here. In addition to Tom, we'll probably have Tom back at some point. He has a lot of awesome and compelling opinions, so look out for him, definitely. You can tweet us at the SOTG. Email us your thoughts on the whole concussion thing. Be glad to, you know, open it up to see what you guys think about it. As fans should definitely have an input. It's your league too, thesotg@gmail.com. Follow us on, or you can subscribe to us on iTunes as well. Unless you guys have anything else.
We good.
Nope.
All right. Well, this extra credit size class is dismissed.